Hi, I'm Charlotte Eagleson, and this is the Hum Ex Guelph. This episode is a special collaboration with Delve Magazine, where I sit down with the co-creators, Callie Gibson and Christopher Lim, to talk about the importance and impact of art history on social movements and human rights. Enjoy! Hello, everyone. I'm currently sitting down with Callie Gibson and Christopher Lim.
Hello.
Hello.
Would you like us to formally introduce ourselves?
Sure.
So I'm Callie. I'm a third year art history and classical studies major at the University of Guelph, and I'm one of the co-founders of Delve.
I'm Chris, and I'm a third year art history major, and I'm also one of the co-founders of Delve. I mean, I like to quip that I'm the other half of Callie's brain when it comes to this venture.
Nice, nice. So just to get started, what was the inspiration for creating Delve?
Well, Chris and I, we met in our classes. We met through our art history courses, and we both lived near each other, and we were both complaining about the same thing. We thought that there wasn't enough representation for art history students, and specifically majors who write primarily for their degree, and there isn't much opportunity to showcase their work or get their ideas heard.
I think the issue is, especially in the field of art history, we don't get that representation, especially for marginalized groups. The whole foundation of art history and the theory associated with it tends to be grounded in Western ways of seeing, and even the pedagogical approaches are rooted in Western theories. See, we wanted to kind of like turn that on its head and kind of highlight how Black and Indigenous people see the world, and especially young, emerging Black and Indigenous artists, writers, that sort of thing.
And we wanted to do it in a way more accessible way, because getting someone to read a lengthy and dry research paper is not very easy. So we wanted to do it in a magazine format, so it's a lot more intriguing and accessible to people who perhaps don't know or aren't in that art realm. So having pictures and a magazine like that you can hold in your hands would be a lot better.
And we kind of model the magazine after more established art publications like Canadian Audit, Border Crossings, and but it's about kind of geared towards younger people, and because the art world tends to be a very sterile space that isn't necessarily the most inclusive, and we're trying to change that with our publication.
No, I honestly love the concept for your magazine. I think it's so cool. When I found out that Callie was, you know, doing this, I saw it online, and I was like, Delve. And then she posted it on her story, and she was like, oh my God, I did this. This is my thing. And I was like, oh my God.
Like, surprise. Big surprise. There's two of us.
Yeah, big surprise, right? It's so cool. So I love that you're providing artists who might not have a platform, you know, you're giving them the ability to be seen and you're boosting their voices. So how are you doing that? Like, what steps are you taking to provide artists of equity-seeking groups a voice on your platform?
So, like, we wanted to kind of highlight and center their voices, especially. It's more that a lot of the struggle of a lot of Black and Indigenous artists is that they don't really see themselves represented, be it in media, in institutions, in academia, in the art world. So we wanted to kind of change that and do it in a way that doesn't necessarily come from the perspective of enriching ourselves, which I think is a lot of problems. Because I know a lot of organizations, especially now in the wake of Black Lives Matter, you know, Every Child Matters, everything that's kind of come to light, a lot of companies and organizations are kind of jumping on that. And we don't necessarily know if that's coming from a place that's authentic. So for us, it's more about moving out of the way and letting them speak for themselves in their own words. We don't want to, you know, engage any sort of tokenization. We just have the desire to kind of change things the way we can change things. I mean, we kind of just, you know, are two students that are kind of just looking to, just like yourself and your organization, we kind of want to just, you know, increase awareness of the social issues.
I just want to emphasize that, like, we've never experienced these things that we want to talk about and touch on. So we really want to provide a place for Black, Indigenous, people of color, LGBTQ. We don't want to speak over them. We don't want to have our narrative written on their stories. Like, we aren't in a position to write about, like, not that we aren't in a position to write about it, but it's just, it would be much better if it could be heard and understood and seen from the perspectives of people identifying as that.
And I think it's so important because all these different cultures, all these different genders, gender identities, they see the world in very different ways through very different lenses. So we don't want to kind of impose our lens on their world. And I think that's the biggest problem with a lot of allyship these days, is that people want to, you know, open up these spaces, but they still operate under the lens of white supremacy, of the West. It's just normalizing the sharing of their experiences in their own world. They themselves are the authorities of their experiences, and that's kind of like they're in the best position to articulate those experiences, be it through art. And art is a really interesting medium because there's also an inherent universality to it, where, you know, other cultures can kind of see things and kind of question the world around them. Art is kind of a medium that kind of, for the lack of a better word, it is like the place where cultures can often meet in the middle.
Do you have anything to add, Callie?
We had a little example of just kind of what we're trying to do. So we want to move against providing hollow gestures. It's good as an individual to post in your story awareness for things and get voices heard, but we want to actually provide that. Like, instead of posting a little black square on our Instagram, like, we actually want to provide a place for these voices to be heard. And so an example we kind of thought of was, in the summer, my friend and I, we did a print sale. So we handmade all these prints and we sold them, and we gave 100% of the proceeds toward Black Lives Matter. But we also wanted to state that reparation doesn't always have to be money. And you can offer in other ways. And with our magazine, you want to do that by providing a platform.
Okay, that's actually really cool. Sorry. So instead of, you know, taking all of this performativism and stuff that, you know, you see online a lot now, this magazine is sort of providing the opportunity to go further, but through an artistic means and, mm-hmm. you know, using art as a paradigm in a sense. And yeah. Okay.
We want to give back what we kind of took from the community, and that's not really monetary value. It's more just their voice. So we're giving them the space to do that.
And I mean, when we were discussing and conceiving this publication, we wanted to know how we could be very different from things that have been done in the past. And the idea of reparations kind of comes up a lot, is like, you got to put your money where your mouth is. And for us, that's kind of, you know, reparations can come in many forms. Like, even if you're just like that Callie did, was basically do those prints. And I thought that was really good. She used her own artistic practice and a position coming from a position of privilege to kind of, you know, give back to communities that have traditionally been marginalized. And again, getting away from those hollow gestures.
So after sort of like looking over your website and everything and looking through, you know, your personal statements about, you know, what Delve magazine is all about, Chris, I noticed that you have these sort of self-established four eyes, and they're intersectional, introspective, inclusive, and international. And that is sort of the basis of Delve magazine. Do you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
So again, with inclusivity, like, we kind of wanted to go beyond just, you know, talking about marginalized peoples. We want to actually, again, as we said, include those voices, be it in our editorial mandate, like in our constitution that kind of like guides how we organize ourselves. In our editorial mandate, we actually have a stipulation where a proportion of our editorial team in time will actually come from those marginalized voices. So they can actually guide the decision-making process. So it's not like the two of us always gatekeeping those voices. And again, you know, it's kind of going against the Western modernity and the normativity that's kind of established, like, in our artistic institutions and galleries and museums, is that it's all very sanitized. And we kind of wanted to get to the raw, the rawness of people's art practices, because I think that's how they articulate their voices best.
I can take international. That one's very self-explanatory. I also want to give credits all to Chris on these four eyes. It's all his creativeness. So international, it's exactly what it says. It's just talking about how our practices have become more diverse and that there's tons of multiculturalism nowadays. You're exposed to so much, and we just wanted to explore all kinds of different art and not just focus everything again from Western origins and Western perspectives. Because it's all fun and good for just me and Chris to take over and write everything. But we want, like, writers and perspectives from a whole bunch of different backgrounds.
Okay. I love that. So what does the introspection and the introspective eye then mean to Delve magazine?
So, I mean, when you look at someone's aura, it's not always just a way to understand other cultures and other people. We want to understand how we relate to those cultures. And when you look at an aura piece, this is something that a lot of people, I feel, don't really think too much about. But it's actually a way to reveal more about ourselves as well. It's so powerful because it makes you reevaluate yourself and how in your place in the world and how you see the world. Like, the institutions can only change when people realize that they're not good. And I think those oppressive systems only continue to exist because people tolerate them. And I think being exposed to those different viewpoints, it's a journey that you take. And it's not like something that will change like a flip of a switch. Like, I think just me being at a loss for words to describe that feeling of introspection, I think it's just every person has to undertake that journey on their own. Be it when it doesn't even have to come through art, like just any sort of media, any sort of just even just listening to other people speak about their experiences and speak about their truths. And just, I think the art that we present, we want to make people think critically about the world around them.
Yeah, and there was this really great TED Talk by a curator in the States named Nina Simone, not the singer, but she had this whole TED Talk about participatory museums, and I think that it really puts into perspective what introspection is trying to do. But the concept was basically participatory museums, so they want you to get involved with things. So one of the examples that she gave was that the museum offered this tombstone cleaning, activity, what do you call it? A field trip. but it was something that was done weekly, and it was to bring together groups of people who otherwise wouldn't have talked and wouldn't have met and wouldn't have collaborated. And it was with homeless people and volunteers from the museum. So in any other situation, there's a little bit of a fear factor there and a little bit judgment, I believe, from certain individuals there. They got to talk and they got to hear these people's past and they got to hear these people's perspectives and they got to collaborate on this shared project that was for the greater good of the cleaning the tombstones. And it just really brings to light how much everyone really does have in common. No matter where you're from, no matter what you do, no matter what your background is, you have a lot more in common with people than you think. And we have to celebrate that diversity and bring people together. And then our magazine is hopefully going to be able to do that. And watching that TED Talk, I really took a step back and I was like, whoa, I have some of these judgments. I have some of the stigma against. If I was in that situation, I would likely feel uncomfortable. We want to give stories and articles and show people stuff that they wouldn't normally have the chance to see and take a step back and reflect on that.
Mainstream media is usually very heavily curated, and you feel like we want Delft to kind of be a place for artists and thinkers to kind of unwind and just, speak their truths.
Yeah, we want it to be really raw.
You talk about sort of this idea that even though we may come from different backgrounds or hold different identities or labels, that we can still appreciate a common good, and that can maybe come through art and the introspection of art. The intersectional eye within your mandate, does that sort of apply to that idea that you can come into a common space with different labels and different lived experiences?
I think that's such a good point, because I think academia especially has this tendency to, and even contemporary activism, these has this tendency to silo issues into and compartmentalize them. So we look at feminism and feminism alone. We look at Black justice and Black justice alone, and environmental justice alone. And what people don't really realize is that these threads all intersect. I won't even say intersect. They're just so entwined with one another. And you can't talk about, environmental and climate justice without addressing the elephant in the room and addressing the fact that Indigenous peoples and their relationality with the land is so integral to understanding how to actually fix this problem. And when we look at feminism, bell hooks is actually a really good example. She was a writer who really kind of spoke to she really critiqued the foundations of the second wave of feminism, I believe, and how it often excluded the experiences of Black women. And everybody faces different levels of oppression, and if you just simply lump everything together into one, you find that it actually marginalizes those other experiences. So that's kind of what we wanted to do with our magazine, is just, you know, not looking at it as just a single issue, but looking at how those issues are connected.
That pretty much encompasses it. Just like to put it shortly, we don't want to just look at one piece of the puzzle.
I love what Callie brought up with the puzzle piece sort of analogy, where you can be one part of a larger picture, but you can sort of represent your own thing. You can like have your own lived experiences, but it can come into the art world and it can come into, you know, this greater vision of activism, but you can still represent your own lived experiences. So the latest piece published online by Callie is titled The Vitality of Resilience. It discusses how the development of art history relies on the resilience of artists. In your introduction, you discuss circumstantial resilience and the need to break from tradition. Can you expand on that, Callie?
Yeah, so circumstantial resilience, that's kind of a confusing term. But to break it down, it refers to artists and individuals responding in the moment. So lots of things happen in the world. This is a known fact. So like genocide, oppression, war, feminism, like anything. So circumstantial resilience just refers to how we react to social change. And the resilience is born from what's happening around those people, and it's represented in the art.
To add to that, I think art is usually a response to the world. And we go back to this point of how art articulates lived experience. And it's just that vehicle of that response to things that are happening in the world. Like when you go back to ancient Greece, you know, a lot of the myths in the ancient world were allegorical in nature and very didactic in, you know, teaching people how to live their lives based on what was happening at the time. And I think that's the same thing that's happening in the contemporary moment with this social change. Naturally, the art is going to respond to that. Not only that, but it's also very cyclical in nature. Art responds to social change, but art itself can be a vehicle of social change. And I think that's a really interesting way to put the vitality of resilience, is that it's just such an important component of, you know, societies moving forward and people expressing their truths.
Expanding more on the classical point, like people in ancient Greece, I don't know if people know the origins of mythology at all, but a lot of mythology stems from ancient Greek people are just walking around. They hear an echo in the forest and they're like, what's that? So then they rationalize this by making up a whole myth with characters and gods and stories. And then that's their rationalization and how they expressed that situation that they encountered. So although it's very far-fetched, it's the same thing as now. So like we're not representing echoes and we're not finding etiological origins for everything in the world around us. That's kind of been already done by them. So now we're reacting to things around us that are much more intense.
Fluid and dynamic.
Yeah.
Fluid and dynamic. Okay, I really like that. Yes.
And I think going back to that point of rationalization, I think I can't speak to everyone, but like I feel like the process of art making comes from a really deep place of trying to make sense of the world around them. And I think that's what makes art so powerful, is that there's infinitesimal possibilities to explore and like so many perspectives. Like it's a never-ending process, and that's change and growth, to sum it up in a nutshell. And I think that's why art plays such an important role in social change. It's a space that's been sorely underutilized, so to speak, by the institutions. They're not really, you know, I feel like the art world isn't really channeling those forces in a way that necessarily will be conducive to the change that we need to see in the world today.
So I have a question here that says, how does breaking tradition in art parallel social justice and human rights movements? But I think we did sum that up really well with Chris saying that art is a response to social justice and human movements, but then art can also be a vehicle that, you know, pushes society towards social change. But is there anything else that you have that you'd like to add?
Well, like one of my favorite artists right now, her name is Leanne Simpson, and she's Anishinaabeg, and she's from an area of what is now Eastern Ontario, and she speaks to her truths, like she speaks to the land, and like a lot of her academic practice comes from this, is just how land can be used to teach important lessons in life, really. And And I think he articulates those indigenous life ways so well. Like, I'm not going to even begin to attempt to paraphrase, like, some of her stories. I think if you are interested, you need to check out her work for yourself. And she just, like, speaks to the importance of the land. And I feel like how, like, Western education systems kind of focus more on individualism and the kind of what Leanne Simpson actually coins as extractive capitalism, how, like, you can just see how diametrically opposed those two systems are. So, like, I found that her artistic practice really opened my eyes to just how, like, this just the relationships and the inherent relationality that exists in how Indigenous people see the world. And I think that's something that we really need to kind of do better and, you know, strive for a better world.
When we look back at history, we have these very specific titles for, like, what's happened in the world. Like, we all know, like the super typical, but everything is labeled. Like, the Renaissance is labeled the Renaissance. Medieval is medieval. Like, we know what that is in our brain. But as this is happening, like, these are just titles that we put on these events way, way in the future. Those weren't titles that they gave themselves and that they identified that under that. Take a step. When you're looking into history and when you're looking into specifically art history, you want to put yourself into their position instead of looking from a very modern and contemporary perspective.
Positionality is so important. I think when you look at things, and even when you write about things and you speak about things, you always, I think, have to be cognizant of your positionality and your relationship to the things that you're talking about and the things that you're trying to articulate, because I think that's so important to recognize, because understanding that relationship to what you're seeing helps clarify things a lot more.
You can look back and see, why did they do these things? What position were they in to make these decisions? And even looking at paintings, why were they using those colors? Why were they portraying themselves this way? And it's difficult to remove yourself from your contemporary position where you know a lot about the past, but, like, put yourself into their position where they had their very small world, and that's what they're working with.
Okay. I actually love that. I have never thought about art in that sense, because I'm, you know, don't have the art history background by any means, but
I don't think you even need an art history or a formal, like, mm-hmm. I think the whole, even the concept of a formal education is a construct, really. Like, again, when you go back to Leanne Simpson and the Anishinaabe's use of land as pedagogy, I think that in itself just speaks volumes of how much we as settlers and, like, descended from Western systems have imposed these methods of seeing the world on others. And you can see, like, that destructive effect, would be in the, you know, environmental degradation, the violence enacted against Indigenous women and children, and the ongoing genocides that continue to happen and continue to be perpetrated by these systems. So I think it's really important, even outside the context of that, like, outside of just art history, even, I think that's just something that's, I think, should be more universal. Just, like, you know, just be critical about how you see things. And for us, that's all right. For someone else, it could be literature, it could be poetry, it could be taking a walk outside and, you know, thinking about how you relate to the world.
Moral of the story is, it's really easy to sit back and criticize what has happened in the past, but, like, you need to put yourself in a place to see where the people of history and people who have made these things that we're looking back on now come from.
Okay. There are so many things that I, like, hadn't even thought of when we had planned this podcast. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get Delve on here, and we're just going to talk about maybe some art history and how it relates to human rights. And I'm not a very artistic person. I don't, you know, I go to art galleries and things, but I don't.
I go and I look, right?
Like, I don't, you know, I haven't ever taken the time to think about how art could do so much for even just, like, the world, period. So
I think you boil down to a really great point. Looking in itself and just seeing the world as a practice in of itself, and that's something that you can be critical of. And I think people don't, I think it's hard for people to sometimes see and understand that seeing as a practice and being cognizant of how you see the world is really important.
Yeah. You got to consciously think about things and, like, consciously see how you're looking at the world. And probably you need to change how you're looking at the world.
That's a little
bit of self-reflection to do there.
Yeah. Yes, very much so. Okay. Wow. Thank you so much, Callie and Chris.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
It was such a pleasure.
This has been amazing. This has been so good. It's been so insightful. Yeah, that's literally all I can say. I just wanted to say thank you so much to Callie Gibson and Christopher Lim for this very amazing interview and for helping out with this episode of the podcast. If you wanted to find out more about Delve Magazine, check out their Instagram at @DelveMagazine_. If you are interested in being featured or getting involved with Delve Magazine, email delve@uoguelph.ca or find the call for submissions information at delvemagazine.ca. I'm your host, Charlotte Eagleson. This has been the Hum Ex Guelph, a production of Jiayu Ex Guelph. You can find more information on Instagram or online at jiayuexguelph.ca.